Well, good morning and welcome back to Corinth in Your Car. We are really glad that you have tuned in today. Is this episode 23?
23.
This is the Michael Jordan episode. There we go.
Or LeBron James.
It's the Michael Jordan episode.
Or the Barry Ward.
Barry Ward.
Or Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah. Or that one junior high basketball player who said, I got to get number 23, you know?
That's right.
It's this one, that episode.
Does Bronny wear that too?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
If your dad was LeBron, would you wear his number?
I don't know.
I think he does six is what he does.
Did LeBron wear that for USA as well?
I believe so.
Michael Jordan did six for USA, right?
He was nine.
Nine. Okay, there you go. So LeBron did six.
Yeah, I wore six in high school.
There you
and,
go.
Competition soccer and then also college soccer wore six. That was my number.
Okay.
There we go. We're off to a rollicking start.
What number were you, Adam?
I was number 10 in college and 24 in high school.
24?
24 because I was one better than Michael Jordan.
Nice.
It's because 23 was already retired at Ozark.
Shifted from 8 to 24.
Yeah.
So there you go. I always had a 4 in my number.
Okay.
So growing up, it was 4. And then when that became unavailable, it was 14. And when that became unavailable, it was 44.
Is that because four is
just my favorite number, man?
Representative of humanity, and I'm just kidding.
No,
it is though.
As a 5-year-old kid who was picking his number, that was not the reasoning behind my selection.
At that point, were there four brothers, or was the Wade already in existence?
No, Wade did not exist.
So maybe that was why.
I don't know. I have no clue.
No,
I think I just picked a pick, and then I stuck with it because I'm stubborn.
Because you're faithful. Faithful.
Right. Stubborn and faithful. The same thing. Hey, how we doing this morning, guys? Doing okay?
Doing pretty good.
Yeah?
Yeah. Can't complain. I'd like to see the sun again. That'd be nice.
Hey, tomorrow.
Is it tomorrow?
Coming out tomorrow.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah. Put on the Beatles.
Here comes the sun. That's right.
Yeah.
Looking forward to that. Fridays are always good. And
you hiking Stone Mountain again? Josh has been doing this a lot recently.
I am. So I'll be out at Stone Mountain.
Are you doing it over or under 4 times?
I'm going to try to go 5. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. 5 times. I will cheer you on.
I won't be doing that.
Not going to go once.
Yeah. Hey, you know,
they have that little thing, you know, where you can
Skyride
a couple dollars and
closed
go up to
right
the top.
Now. Yeah, yeah.
Closed.
Actually, no, you want to hear a story about that? Last week I went and it was so windy at the top. It was so cold and so windy. It was like 40 degrees. Wind chill was 30 or something like that. But the best part of the day was that, I kid you not, I got to the top and there was a man wearing a shawl and carrying a shofar, which is a horn made out of a ram's horn that you, Israelite, would blow into.
Yeah.
And he blew that thing every 2 minutes down the mountain. He was behind me the whole way. So, I'm hiking down and I hear, every 2 minutes, man.
Was he chanting Jericho?
I was about to say. I mean, there were walls coming down somewhere.
Yeah, he was marching down the building at the top. No, not really. No. He was blowing that shofar every 2 minutes.
That's hilarious.
I got a video if you want to see it later. So,
man, you can't make that up.
No,
that
is absolutely not.
A great experience to have in life.
Yeah. Yeah,
man. What if you just had him go through your life continually and just hype you up all the time with
your
with
hype
the shofar.
Man plays a shofar.
You just need a hype man to follow you around and introduce you next time you're up to preach. Yeah. Jeremy and the band will close up. Guy with the shofar will come up and he'll announce
and the shawl.
Josh,
gotta have the shawl.
Yeah, and the shawl.
Gotta have the shawl.
Gotta announce it.
It's like the baseball players have their walkout song.
Yeah. Right.
We could have a walkout song to preach or something.
Ooh, that'd be good.
Yeah.
Hey, that's a good question. If you could have a walkout song to preach, what would it be?
Oh, man. I don't know any songs.
Remember last week? He's I don't listen to the radio.
You don't listen to the radio.
I don't listen to music. So
I don't know. We'll hit that one at a different time. We'll think
about
that.
Here we go. We could take suggestions.
Okay, take suggestions.
Hey, yeah,
comment from the listeners.
Yeah, absolutely.
Shoot us a note.
You've got to let us know.
Song B. Yeah.
Josh's walkout song, Adam's walkout song, and Luke's walkout song.
That's
four
it.
Four sermons. Yeah. And I don't know. Maybe we'll do it.
Maybe we'll work it in Sunday.
Yeah. There you go.
No promises.
Cool. Depends on the song you choose.
Yeah.
Hey, cool. Next thing on the calendar, I don't know if you guys are into this, but the next holiday is Valentine's Day.
It is not a holiday.
If you want to call it a holiday.
It's not a holiday.
If you've been around Corinth ever, you probably know that Adam doesn't like that holiday.
2:14.
Yeah, it's a Hallmark.
It's a conspiracy theory developed by Hallmark to make some money.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not even, you don't even like the tradition of the history of St. Valentine?
I don't even know it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. No, we are not that antagonistic against it, but we don't make it a huge deal either. Sure. We just, you know, have regular date nights throughout the year. Mm-hmm. And if Valentine's Day falls on a date, here's the deal. Like, everybody's out, so it's like so busy. So I would just rather kind of stay home that night if it's my personal preference. I mean, no judgment if you do, obviously.
But it's Tuesday this year.
Yeah, I'd rather just stay in.
Nice.
So Tuesday this year, since it is on a Tuesday, that means Sasha will be at ballet with the girls and I will be at home with Dominic doing a boys' night. So that'll be our Valentine's Day.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah,
Jennifer and I have been dating together since October of 1997. She would have to confirm this, but I imagine we only did Valentine's Day maybe once, twice.
Yeah.
And it was just like from the very beginning, it was like, yeah, I don't do this.
There you go.
Yeah.
And she said, okay.
Yeah. Absolutely. Because she's amazing.
Yes. I love it. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it. Part of me is like, I'm offended by the thought of Valentine's Day as a husband, because it's like, I don't need you to put a holiday in front of me to remind me to cherish my wife.
Turning a get-to into a have-to.
Like that's what I'm saying. Like, this is stuff like, you know, the Valentine's Day is stuff that I try to do on a regular basis, you know? So it's not – and, you know, I don't always live up to it, but that's kind of what I try to do is do Valentine's Day every month.
But there you
not
go.
Spend any money at Hallmark. I don't know. So there you go.
Always buy flowers on February 16th.
Yeah, 16th. When they're marked down
mm-hmm.
and all that sort of stuff. You know those
Dave Ramsey approved.
I will say this. Dave Ramsey approved. When I was a kid, do you know those little, like the Valentine's candy?
Oh, yeah.
Like the, you know, sayings on them, like be mine and you're cute.
Oh, the chalk, like the chalk, like the chalk that chalk has sugar in it.
The Tums.
I loved those when I was a kid. Like they were so good.
Yeah,
I had one like a couple years ago. Like somebody had them out, and I was like, "Oh, I remember those! Like those are super good." Easily one of the worst things that I've ever tasted.
Mm-hmm.
Like they are so gross, and I did not realize.
Oh yeah,
you know, the things you like when you're kids, you don't like.
I think
them
they're
as
not
much
making
anymore.
Them as well anymore either. I remember as a kid, it seemed like you could always read the words, and now it's like half of them. I don't even know what's said on there.
It's just because
our printing is so bad.
Our eyes are getting worse.
That's, well, that's it too.
That's what it is. You don't have 12-year-old eyes anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
I got the glasses to help me out. I see 20.
I don't have readers yet, but
you getting there?
Not yet. But maybe what's the magic number? 42? Is that what your doctor said?
43, 44 in that range. Yeah.
You use them?
Oh yeah.
You use readers? Okay.
Yeah, I don't need them a whole lot. I actually went to the eye doctor a couple weeks ago. And it turns out I'm nearsighted in one eye and farsighted in the other one.
Oh, so that's complicated.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like much or anything, but so, yeah. Fun stuff.
Let's jump in to our conversation for today with the sermon. Adam, to my friend who left the faith, part number 3, give us a little bit of a recap of what was said. In your sermon.
Yeah, well, whenever we think about why people leave the faith, why people leave the church, one of the issues that'll commonly come up is it's the people in it. You know, they're just a bunch of hypocrites, and they don't do what they say they're going to do, and or they've been hurt by somebody in the church. And so really just wanted to try to dive into causes of hypocrisy. What is it that drives that? Why do we act like hypocrites at times? And then just try to get, you know, hopefully helpful in terms of like, well, how do we avoid that? Because once again, nobody wants to be a hypocrite.
Sure, right.
I mean, whether you're a Christian or not a Christian, nobody wants to be known as a hypocrite who does one thing or says one thing and does another.
Right.
And so it's like, well, let's be helpful. How do we kind of avoid that? And so really that was just kind of the driving point of it. And hopefully it was helpful. Hopefully to any of our ones or friends, you know, that have struggled with the faith. Maybe it brought a little bit of insight into why we can be hypocrites. Even for those of us who've been in church for a really, really long time, just helping us to understand the drivers.
Yeah. I think that's good. Josh, as you're kind of thinking back to what was talked about yesterday, anything stand out to you as particularly helpful or encouraging or challenging? Talk to us about it.
Yeah, there was one note in there when, Adam, you were talking about, I believe it's Matthew 18, right?
Mm-hmm.
The story.
Yeah.
And Peter asks, how many times shall I forgive my brother? Like 7 times? And
yeah,
it's kind of like, hey, look at me, because the rabbis taught 3 or 4, so I'm going to go 7. Like
doubling it, baby.
Doubling, yeah.
Way to go, Peter.
Yeah. Man, it hit me in this note. It said, if you're counting how many times you've forgiven someone, keeping tabs, then you're not really forgiving them.
Yeah.
You're just postponing revenge. And I remember sending this sermon back to you with a comment on the side that said, ouch. Like,
yeah,
that one hit me, because immediately it made me think of 1 Corinthians 13. Love keeps no record of wrongs.
Yeah.
It's like it doesn't make tally marks, and how easy it is for us to kind of keep track about, well, I've done this, and they haven't really measured up, and they haven't done their part of the deal. So
right,
that hit me, you know, as we think about just, I don't know, hypocrisy. We all have moments of inconsistency or hypocrisy in our life, and we would do well to stop counting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because whenever you are counting, what you're doing is something that you hate when other people do.
Oh yeah.
What you are essentially making yourself out to be the victim, right? Which you very well could be, but that's not where you want to stay. And that's not the attitude, the posture that you want to have.
Well, and it's just forgetful of how much you've been forgiven.
Right.
You know, and so obviously that's the point of that story too, is the man had forgotten the billions of dollars of debt.
Yeah.
And Jesus, I think, was hyperbolic on purpose to make just a huge point.
Yeah.
You know, we have been forgiven so much, so how dare we
you
know, withhold it and start making tallies on somebody else.
Yeah. I love it. Let's jump into the word itself, hypocrite, which we discussed around the table before we hit record, how it is actually said in Greek. I think we landed on hypocritis.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Or something like that.
I don't know if that's how it's going to be said on Sunday, but that probably
that's phonetically kind of the way that it is. So kind of the context for this word is transliteration from Greek, and it's kind of the idea of acting to play a role. So Adam, talk to us a little bit about kind of the background of this word, and then maybe let's ask the question, like, what is hypocrisy really? And maybe what are some things that it isn't? How is it disguised in other ways to kind of help us understand the background of what we mean?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was really interesting. You know, it is a play acting. It's a stage word. And so it is about, you know, a man or a woman who has, I think if I remember correctly too, it's like they were even wearing masks, you know, in their acting. And so it is the idea of, I'm playing a role, I'm wearing a mask. And so that's the word that Jesus uses to describe people who were outwardly saying, oh, I'm all right, I'm good, I've got all these things, you know, under control. But inwardly, they were so far away from what God wanted for their lives. It's a lot of the Isaiah passage, and I can't remember chapter verse, but you know, they were honoring God with their lips, but their hearts were far from them, far from him. And his harshest words were directed at hypocrites. Matthew 23 is like blazing.
Yeah.
Like blazing with just Jesus going after these Pharisees, these teachers of the law. You know, woe to you, hypocrites. Woe to you. Woe to you. I mean, it's just like, it's a lot. And, the other thing, too, and I don't remember if I mentioned this in the message or not, but the word only shows up 17 times in the New Testament, hypocrite, and Jesus is the only one who uses it.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so he is the one who created this idea of, you know, play acting and playing a role whenever it comes to our faith. Mm-hmm. And so it was obviously something that meant that Jesus was passionate about trying to eradicate, you know, from our lives.
Yeah. So there you go. Anytime you use the word hypocrite, you're using a word Jesus made.
Exactly.
There you go. I like it. Good. So that's kind of the idea behind it. It's playing a role, acting or doing something that isn't really you,
mm-hmm.
right? Or it's the idea, we get kind of the idea of not being able to practice what you preach,
right.
All that sort of stuff. We talked about this kind of before we hit record, but there are some things that kind of hypocrisy.
There you go.
And other things kind of get kind of jangled up in there.
Yeah.
Right? So like, talk it to us a little bit about what maybe you would say golly, the word is hard. Hypocrisy.
You just want to say it in the Greek?
Because whenever you say hypocrite, it's the hippa.
Yeah.
But whenever you go hypocrisy, it's hippa, right? Yeah. So, ooh. Yeah.
The syllables are different.
So what is it not, though?
Well, I think that one of the things that we can sometimes confuse hypocrisy for is inconsistency. There is a difference between living an inconsistent life and being a hypocrite. So inconsistency is the idea of, I know I'm not measuring up to what I truly want to do. I want to love the Lord with all my heart, all my soul, all my mind, all my strength, love my neighbor as myself, you know, and do these things. And believe it or not, I'm not 100% consistent in that. That does not make me necessarily a hypocrite.
Right.
That makes me someone who is inconsistent, still sinful.
Right.
But hypocrisy is like this, like blindness to it. You are absolutely blind. You think you're doing all things correctly.
Mm-hmm.
You think that you've got everything in order, but you don't.
Yeah.
And so there's a blindness that is there. And what happens is, and this is Paul David Tripp language, you know, our sin blinds us to our blindness. It gives us a blind spot to where we can't truly see, look, I'm living inconsistently. Mm-hmm. See, that's the difference between inconsistency is like, I'm aware of it. It's like, I know that I'm not measuring up.
Sure.
Hypocrisy can't even begin to see that you're not measuring up. And so therefore you are very harsh towards others.
Mm-hmm.
Inconsistency, I think, leads more to grace towards others. Josh, what do you think?
Yeah. I mean, just lots of thoughts floating around. One of them is from Psalm 19 that actually says, it's like a prayer to God that says, keep your servant from willful sins, or some translations say presumptuous sins. And you look at the Old Testament of the Bible, like Leviticus, I love that series we did last year, you know, Lost Me in Leviticus or whenever it was. And we talked about sacrifices and the Day of Atonement and all kinds of stuff. And I remember in there, there's all sorts of sacrifices when you sin. And a lot of them were accidental kind of things. And there was always a sacrifice for that. But what there was not a sacrifice for was a willful, high-handed sin where someone just said, I don't care. I'm gonna do it anyway. And that to me is also part of hypocrisy. I think, you know, the difference between what'd you say, inconsistency is it's not that it's like Paul, right, in Romans, where he says, I do what I don't want to do, and I don't do what I do want to do. And he's broken over it.
Yes.
And he's not necessarily trying, and it's inconsistency. It's not necessarily Paul with a high hand going, God, I don't care. I'm gonna do this anyway.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's also what he would write, you know, should we just go on sinning so grace would increase?
Exactly.
Absolutely not. And so I think that
meganoito. To hit somebody,
yeah, like
by no means.
There you go.
I think that is there you go, Greek. You pronounced that one correctly.
Yeah.
Just in case I was talking over you, you want to say it again?
Meganoito. By no means.
By no means. Yes.
Very strong language there.
Yes. It is. You know, so I think that that is part of the difference in hypocrisy. Is hypocrisy is in some cases some high handedness. Like, I know better, but I'm going to do it anyway on purpose. As opposed to an inconsistency going, man, oh, I'm so broken because I didn't want to, I didn't mean to, I was caught again, and you're broken over yourself. That's a totally different response, you know, and that happens outside of Christianity too. It's not just Christians who are hypocrites or inconsistent.
Every single one of us are inconsistent.
Every human deals with this where, in some areas of life, someone will be tempted to be a hypocrite as a husband or a wife or as a leader. But inevitably, we're all going to be inconsistent at times. And so that, I think that's a huge thing to bring out is the difference.
In some ways, too, to throw another Bible word on it, what we're talking about is sanctification. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about the process of being more made like Christ.
Yep.
And that is a slow process.
Mm-hmm.
It is, to use a football term, it is like Josh Allen. It is a roller coaster ride.
There you go.
Okay. Some weeks it's really good. Other weeks it's like, what did that guy do? What's going on?
Are you saying Josh Allen is in the process of being sanctified and Patrick Mahomes is already a saint?
Yes, he's already.
You're really saying
I'm good with it.
Semi divine.
Yeah. I'm good with it.
I don't know. I go that far because there's still a game this weekend, and I don't want to.
I believe football Jesus is what you called him a few years ago.
I have called him football Jesus before. But yes,
it's too good.
But so the sanctification process is a process, and so. And I think a lot of times too is what we can do is we can look at someone and we can see their behavior now and we can go, that guy says he's a Christian. That gal says she's a Christian. And I mean, look at how did you see that post that they did on Facebook? Yeah. And can you believe, but what would be fun to be able to say to them is like, yeah, but did you know them 10 years ago?
Sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you know how far they've come?
Right.
And so are they acting in a manner accordance to what a Christian should? No. But
right.
let's set some stakes in the ground and go, yeah, but did you see the way that they were 10 years ago? This guy was an alcoholic or this was, blah, 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 blah. And mm-hmm. look where he is now. Is he still rough around the edges? Absolutely. But he's making progress.
Right.
And so is that hypocrisy? No, that's not hypocrisy. That's inconsistency. That's sanctification at work. And I think that's a huge distinction that needs to be made.
Yeah. I think that's good. One thing I'm thinking, and I'll see if this thought kind of comes together as I speak out loud, but I'm thinking about just that difference between hypocrisy and inconsistency and thinking if you are someone who is looking at the church and you are frustrated because you see what you believe to be a bunch of hypocrisy, and we're not going to deny that it's there, but if this has gotten to a point to where you are anti-faith or anti-Christianity because of the hypocrisy or inconsistency that you see in the people of the church, then I think sometimes this gets to a situation to where you have tunnel vision on the people of God rather than actually having tunnel vision on the character of God himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so you have this expectation that all of these people who claim the name of Christ are automatically going to act like, look like, love like Jesus did all of the time.
Yeah.
That's our goal. That's what we want to do, but we fall short of it often, right? And so I just hear people all the time say, well, I left the church because the people there didn't really love me or treat me well. It's like, yeah, you know where that's going to happen? Anywhere that there's people,
mm-hmm.
right? And so mm-hmm. so there's this idea sometimes is like, okay, don't get so focused on the people that you lose sight of the one who actually created and the one who actually saves and the one who actually sustains. Because what I would say then is that maybe you didn't have your hope in Jesus after all.
Yeah.
Maybe you had your hope in the idea that you were going to find a community, and we hope that you do and you should in the church, but maybe there was just a little bit something off there.
Yeah. Growing up, played soccer and we traveled around to tournaments and played games all over the place. And one of the dads of like on our team was especially angry and vocal about it. And when he didn't think there was a correct call, he would let the referee know. And I was embarrassed about his behavior. He even got kicked out of some games. Like got a
it's okay
parent.
To tell us if it was Mark.
Well, his son's name was Josh, okay. But there was two Joshes on the team.
Gotcha.
It was not me. No. It was embarrassing. Yeah. And he got kicked out of some games. He got a red card as a dad. Like that hardly ever happens, but it can be. Like he got kicked out. And so it would be silly for me to like stop playing soccer because that dad.
Sure.
And his behavior was out of line. He was hypocritical, but he didn't represent all the dads.
Right.
The other the other 10 dads on the boys starting
or,
on the team.
Or your teammates, or your coach, yeah, or absolutely. The game of soccer.
Or the school.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, this was, travel team, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah. No. And so I think, you know, one of the things, so we based this, the Siri kind of off an idea from a book, you know,
right.
To My Friend Who Left the Faith, and series of letters from this guy to his friend who had left the faith. And I remember one of the things he was talking about in this idea, kind of going off of what you were talking about, Luke, and even Josh there, is, you know, for so many people, they think that the answer, the non-religious answer to hypocrisy is leave the church.
Right.
Just bail on it. Doesn't work, obviously. It's, you know, and it's kind of understandable that, you know, people would just jump to that. But that's not really a great answer. And I love what he says. He's like, you know, look at our world because, we don't like redemption. Mm-hmm. We like feeling morally superior.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we want to do. And so he's like, sure, the church is filled with hypocrites, but those hypocrites might just indicate that the whole thing is working. Okay.
Yeah. That's the flip the script language again.
Yes. 'Cause
when you see it from that perspective, and you're willing to, that it opens up everything.
Like I saw a church sign this week as I was doing just research and stuff, and it was like, this church is full of hypocrites, and there's room for one more.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And so what do we do in a society, in our society, though, take it out of the church whenever we've got systems in place and, you know, something happens, at least what we used to do, and maybe it's changed now, is we would say, well, that was just a bad apple. You know, that person is not representative of all Democrats or all Republicans, of, you know, all people of color, all people, you know, all white people.
Yeah.
That's what we say. That's just a bad apple. You know, well, there's some bad apples out there that do that. And so what he challenges his friend to do is examine the church in that way. And so if someone in a church, you know, commits a horrible offense or just acts like a jerk, you know, then, hey, it's a bad apple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in the midst of even now, it's even kind of further where we have cancel culture.
Yep,
and it's
I was thinking about that as well.
It's not just a bad apple. It's you can't even have a bad day.
Right.
Like if somebody finds some tweet that you said 10 years ago and you're in leadership and they take that out of context or whatever, it's like, oh, you're done forever. It's like, wow, that wasn't even – that's just crazy.
Well, and if you think about it too – and if we use this fruit analogy, you can get a bad apple off of a healthy tree.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Just because
one apple. It could be next to 1,000 good apples.
Exactly. And so just because one apple is bad doesn't mean that the tree is diseased.
Right.
And
so there's something that has infiltrated that apple.
Exactly. Yeah. And so learning to see things like that. I just thought that was helpful vocabulary.
Yep.
As we think through this. Because it's a real problem. I mean, we're not denying that the church has hypocrites in it, that we all act like hypocrites in some ways, you know, inconsistent in those things.
Yeah.
But it's not a, it does not disqualify Christianity as legit.
Yeah.
Because a few or even a lot of apples are diseased.
Well, yeah. And not only that, but to go back to your further point, it may not disqualify it as legit, but it actually might prove it,
Prove it as legit.
Yeah.
Hey, this thing's actually kind of necessary.
Yeah, it is. And so love it. Let's jump into Matthew chapter 18. The story that you used yesterday, it starts with the conversation between Jesus and Peter that Josh mentioned earlier. Peter's asking him, you know, how many times should I forgive? And Jesus kind of responds, well, bless your heart, Peter.
Yeah, exactly.
Not 7 times, but 77 times, you know, all that sort of stuff. The whole point is don't get to a point to where you're counting the amount of times that you are forgiving someone, because that proves that you don't necessarily have a posture of forgiveness towards that person.
Yeah.
Or the understanding that you've been forgiven.
Sure. Like,
that's
right.
Huge. Yeah.
Right. Man. Which is where our conversation is inevitably going to get to as well. But the story... just to recap it, it's about a guy who owes a lot of debt to his master. And when I say a lot of debt, I'm not talking about, you know, the 10,000 that
bags of gold that
that's coming around right now. Maybe we're talking about a lot of money.
Well, and one of the things that's interesting is if I understood the research right, is like 10,000 was like the max number that they had, and so Jesus like goes to the absolute I mean, if he could have said $100 billion quadrillion, he probably would have.
Yeah. Right.
But the point is, it's like this massive, anywhere from 10 million to 10 trillion.
The point is, this guy is in debt and he could work every minute of his life and he would never be out of debt.
Not even close.
So he goes, you know, he gets this debt forgiven by his master.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes around. And he goes up to a guy.
Didn't have to do the snowball. Didn't have to do the snowball.
Dave Ramsey back again. No snowball method.
No snowball method. It was just
two Dave Ramsey references.
It was gone
already. Yeah.
And so then he goes to a guy who owes him money.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, pay up, bro.
Mm-hmm.
Remember whenever I bought your lunch?
Right.
It's time. Like, you got to pay up. And so, you know, master hears about this.
Yep.
Makes him. Gives him the punishment he deserves because he's been forgiven so much, and yet he can't turn around and forgive somebody else for so little. And that's like another thing, Jesus using the dramatic. So, you know, yeah. He's going as high as could possibly be for the guy who has been forgiven, and really not that much for the guy.
No, I mean, it's enough that you would notice it.
Right.
You know, it's not, you know, 10 bucks, but it's not 10 trillion. You know, it's enough to where it's like, that'd be helpful,
right? Yeah, I love the line of the master. He said, "I canceled all of that debt of yours because you begged me to."
Mm-hmm.
Shouldn't you have had mercy on your fellow servant just as I had on you?
Mm-hmm.
And so then the master responded in anger, and the story ends on that note with the guy who was forgiven ends up getting punished the way he should be. So, what does this have to do with hypocrisy? What do we really need to pay attention to? What's striking about this story?
Yeah, I think that this is where we kind of get to the root cause of hypocrisy. And the reason we feel morally superior to people is because we have very little awareness of how much we have been forgiven. And so that's what allows us to put ourselves into that position of, well, I would never, or, you know, I didn't do what they did. And so, right. Or it even puts us into that position of thinking, and this is what I thought, you know, from the book, it was just a great observation from his future father-in-law, that we don't really believe that we've been forgiven.
Yeah.
And so the reason why the guy in the story goes after the dude that only owed him a handful of $1,000 is because he didn't believe that he had truly been forgiven. He's like, you know what? There's no way that guy just forgave me of $10 trillion. There's no way.
Too good to be true.
It's too good to be true. So I'm going to go around and I got to start saving. I got to start earning this, you know, up because I'm sure that bill's coming due.
Sure.
And that's what puts us in a judgmental position. That's what puts us in an unforgiving position. That's what puts us in a place of a divided heart. Mm-hmm. And we say with our lips, oh my goodness, God's grace is so amazing. Thank you so much for forgiving me. Now I got to go earn that.
Yeah.
That's what drives hypocrisy.
Yeah. I love that. And it's so easy to like hear a story like that or look at a story like that and then get like just so angry, so ticked off. But then you stop and realize, and it's like, oh no.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking about the story of David. Mm-hmm. He commits the sin with Bathsheba, gets Bathsheba's husband murdered, all that sort of stuff. And so then God sends Nathan the prophet to tell him a little story about a shepherd who stole the one sheep that another guy had, even though he had so many. And David just gets so mad. He's like, this is ridiculous. This is an injustice. Who is this man? We need to make sure that he's punished. I'm going to take care of the guy who got the sheep stolen, all that sort of stuff. And Nathan just looked at him. He's like, dude, this is you.
Yeah.
Come on, bro. Like
the only time a guy never wants to hear you demand,
right?
Is like, you demand
in this story. And so, you know, we hear stories like that all the time. We look at stories like that and it just makes us so angry. But if we stop and slow down, hold on a second. This might be us more often than we'd like to admit.
Did you ever have a teacher or a coach tell you that, you know, if you're pointing a finger at someone else, you've got three fingers coming back at you?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
A lot of truth to that.
Yeah. I was always trying to be so smart, and it was my mom that said that a lot. I was like, well, then I'm going to point with all my fingers, you know.
Then you just look like an idiot.
I know. Yeah. Oh, well, if I put on confidence. If I say it confidently, it'll be fine. Okay. Yeah. So here, the problem comes down to this. We might not believe that we've been truly forgiven, so we think that we have to work to earn it.
Yeah.
And so just pastorally, what are some words for our people who might feel this way or who might act this way without necessarily knowing that this is the way that they're feeling or this is the way that they're operating?
I mean, we use this language all the time, but I think this is why it's so important that we are continually preaching the gospel to ourselves on a daily basis. I was a sinner saved by grace. I didn't earn it. I don't deserve it. He did all of this for me, and so I give him my life. And that's to both. You know, if you are struggling with the idea of believing that you've truly been forgiven, it's like, well, God sent his son to die on a cross, so he must have been pretty serious about this. So I need to believe this. For those who act, you know, like, oh my goodness, I've got to owe it. I've got to pay this back or something. Then it's preach the gospel to yourself. You can't pay this back.
Right.
There's no way.
Yeah. And that's why it's good news that we have been forgiven, because it's not dependent on you. Josh, yeah. What are your thoughts, man?
I don't know. I'm thinking. I'm reading through this message here. There's so much. The observation for me, I still just kind of go back to the observation between hypocrisy and inconsistency is kind of rising to the top of a huge revelation.
Good.
So
yeah, I think that's huge. I think if we can start to understand that a little bit, it might allow us to act more gracefully towards others when we do feel let down.
Into ourselves.
Into ourselves whenever we let down others.
Yeah, because it can be easy to look at, like, I don't know, like you can just apply it everywhere. If you're married, if you got kids, if you have employees, if you have teammates, to remember, I mean, I guess the thought that was going through my head a while ago is to reference Paul David Tripp again. He wrote a book called Parenting. And I remember reading that one, just kind of a punch between the eyes every single chapter, because it was like, hey, remember, God, your father, has been patient with you. Mm-hmm. So you be patient with your kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have been given grace, so you give grace. Mm-hmm. You have been celebrated, so you celebrate. It's like, oh my goodness. So yeah, huge reminder.
Good. Yeah, I love that. And hopefully for those of you listening, kind of the same encouragement to head your way, is that we really, this conversation about hypocrisy, you might have thought listening is like, oh no, you know, here comes some harsh words from the three guys who say cut it out, but really we're saying, would you just remember that God has been so good to you, and the more that you remember that and the more that that brings you to worship, the more you'll understand that it's really true. And that might actually help with some of the hypocrisy that might come from your actions or from your words and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So let's kind of move on to the application then, right? So we're talking about, how do we avoid it? Well, we need to understand that we're forgiven, but in order to do that, there's some things that we need to maybe do a little bit better. And so, Adam, the three that you gave yesterday, well, sorry, before how do we avoid it, it's the causes of hypocrisy. Mm-hmm. So the causes of hypocrisy are, they don't really know God.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know better yet. Mm-hmm. And they know better, but they choose to disobey, which I think, Josh, you were talking about a little bit. Let's walk through each of those and just kind of give some comments that might be helpful on the first one, the first cause of hypocrisy. They don't really know God. Talk to us about what that actually might look like.
Yeah, this is the, I think this one would probably fall where you would throw the Pharisees and teachers of the law into.
Yeah,
okay,
I think
so
too.
They don't really know him. They claim to know him. They honor him with their lips, but their hearts are far. And so, because they're not truly doing what has been commanded of them, of loving God, loving neighbor, you know,
right?
And as we've been loved, to love others. So I think that would be that one. It's just this one cause of people acting like hypocrites is they just simply don't truly know him. They know about him. There's no relationship. There's no appreciation of grace, and there's no surrender. On the they don't know better yet,
yeah,
that's the sanctification process that we're talking about. And so I don't feel like we're really talking out of both sides of our mouth using two different vocabulary words of hypocrisy and consistency. But, you know, so if you use hypocrisy as an umbrella term that even covers over that inconsistency, that's that. They just don't know better yet.
Right.
And so they're still children in the faith. They're babies in the faith. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, they're going to say X but do Y.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just part of their process, the discipleship process for them. And then the last one is the one that Josh was talking about, the just high-handed sins of just like, I don't care what God says. I'm just going to do this. And so I'm going to use my freedom mm-hmm. as an excuse to do evil. I'm going to use my freedom so that grace may increase.
Right.
To use, yeah. is that Romans 7 language?
It is. Yeah.
Romans 6.
Six.
Yeah.
Okay. To use that vocabulary. And so those are really kind of I'm sure there are more root causes to it, but there's only so many we can cover in a message.
Sure.
But those are just the three that
we
touched on real quick.
No, I think that's really helpful for us to kind of see, all right, well, whenever I am having a moment of inconsistency or just plain old hypocrisy, is there something that fits within these categories? And if so, mm-hmm. I then know the action steps that I need to take in order to kind of keep mm-hmm. it in check. And so how do we avoid it? Well, okay, number one, don't minimize your sins. Instead, yes. Repent of your sins. Give some examples of what that might look like, and how can we just practice that?
Yeah, I think minimizing our sin really comes down to the idea of, you know, probably moral comparison of trying to compare ourselves to other people, because, you know, one of the things we said in the message is, you know, hypocrites don't claim to be perfect. They just don't think that their sins are that bad.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, I mean, yeah, of course, you know, I did a little bit of a fib there, but have you seen what he did?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yep.
And so that moral comparison is what we tend to do. And really what the call is we don't want to minimize and downplay. We're called to repent of our sin, no matter how seemingly insignificant we may feel it is.
Right.
It still grieves the heart of God. And
yeah.
So we repent and say, God, you know, search me. What is it? Psalm 139, you know, search me, O God, and, you know, reveal to me these things. And so that's what we're driving at.
Yeah. Josh, what are your thoughts?
On, repenting, it's active. So, I mean, confession comes in there somewhere, and that's, I mean, I guess, the next one to you about some sort of acknowledgement, but repenting.
Yeah, you know what a hypocrite never does if they're truly a hypocrite? Confess their sins.
Right.
Right. So there's something you can do.
Yeah. And so repentance for me, I start to think of just, it's a verb, it's an action, it's something you're going to do. It requires some sort of change. So if it means deleting an app from your phone, mm-hmm. just real life kind of stuff, or if it means, you know, giving your password to somebody else, if it means canceling a subscription, if it means asking someone to really keep you, you know, accountable or to call you up is rather the better language maybe for us, mm-hmm. or certain language we'd use, or gossip or slander.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's some action involved. When you say repent, it means, yeah, you turn the other way. That's literally what it means, is you mm-hmm. turn around. So
yeah, love it. Second one, don't excuse your sin. So we've got this idea of minimizing your sin, mm-hmm. making it smaller than it really is.
Correct.
But then there's a step further,
yeah.
and it's excusing.
Yes.
And that's a dangerous place to be. So what might this look like, and what is kind of the action step to acknowledging it?
Well, I think, you know, excusing your sin is we defend our actions. Or we blame somebody else mm-hmm. for it.
Right.
You know, if you wouldn't have said that to me, well, then I wouldn't have hauled off and knocked you out.
yeah. Oh, man.
you know?
No, I mean, like,
it's true.
I'm raising young kids right now, and it's so funny, the words that come out of their mouth. Like, why did you hit them?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they yelled at me. It's like, uh-huh. So that requires you to slap them? Like, these don't relate, but they're they're being sanctified, right?
As, yeah, exactly.
God is kind of like our parent as well. Like, he's our father, and he's raising our kids.
Well, it's funny, even in Genesis 3, I mean, what does Adam do whenever God confronts
this
him?
This woman you made for me.
Yeah.
She turns the blame to the serpent.
And she blames the serpent. Yep. And so it's just what we do. It's just like, we excuse it. We remove the blame. We remove our guilt, and we always want to blame somebody else for it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think my coach put it a little bit different than this when I was growing up, but I'll make it more appropriate for the podcast. You know, excuses are like armpits. Uh-huh. Everybody's got them and they all stink.
Yep.
And that's kind of what it is whenever it comes to our sin, is like, everybody's got an excuse. No, very few people can just go, I just didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah.
Now, obviously that happens sometimes, but most often we have a say in the matter.
Yeah.
And so we can come up with all kinds of excuses, and really what we need to do is we confess it. And we spend far too much energy defending our sin than we do confessing and repenting of our sin.
Yeah.
And so or justifying our sin.
Right.
So what the call is to have a repentant heart and to say, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And to move along.
Yeah. And when that comes, you move on to kind of this next one, which is just to look in the mirror.
Yeah.
And don't look in the mirror while you have your play acting mask on.
Correct.
Look in the mirror as yourself and kind of just be honest with what you see. So that you can kind of move on. Talk to us a little bit about that, and then we'll kind of wrap up for the day.
Well, I think one of the big ideas of hypocrisy is that you are more focused on what other people are doing and their actions than you are yours.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're holding them to a higher standard than you even hold yourself to. And so we've got to learn to look in the mirror with open eyes. We don't want to be like the fool that James talks about, who looks into the Word of God and then walks away from it, forgetting what he already, you know, read or learned. You know, it's like looking in a mirror and walking away, not even paying attention to it. And so one of the things Jesus says about hypocrites, to the hypocritical Pharisees, is like, you're blind fools. And they've got blind spots. And we've said it before, but the problem with the blind spot is you can't see it.
Right.
That's by definition what a blind spot is.
Yeah.
And so it's taking the hard look in the mirror and just going, okay, God, you got to help me see this. It may be having the very uncomfortable conversation with a close friend who knows you very, very well and just say, hey, you know, I'm just really trying to figure this out. Do you see some inconsistencies? Do you see some hypocrisy, you know, in me, because I don't want that. And they may be like, you know what?
Glad you asked.
Glad you asked. Love keeps no record of wrongs,
but
I have a list.
Let me pull out my note on my iPhone.
Because I love you.
Categorized by the month.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got it all tagged and organized. It's great.
Oh, man.
But, you know, it's just being able to do that. And I, you know, one of the things we said is like, we look in the mirror and we do the self-reflection, because where we're most condemning of others is probably an indication of where we're most vulnerable personally.
Mm, that's good.
So whatever it is that we see in somebody else that we're just like, oh my gosh, can you believe that, da 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 da, you know? And then it's probably a great time to just go, oh, hold on here.
Yeah.
Is that in me?
Mm-hmm.
Is that why? You know, like I've
is that
always.
Is that why it boils you a little bit when somebody
exactly.
else does it?
Uh-huh.
Like I've always thought, I've always felt pretty strongly, you know, that I can always spot my sins in other people pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if you struggle with something like pride, prideful people can spot pride in somebody else
yep.
quick.
Yep.
You know, those of us who have larger egos, we can spot somebody who has a large ego. And lickety split,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so that's because we're so familiar with it.
Yeah.
And it probably does make our blood boil whenever we see somebody else doing it. It's like, man, I can't believe that guy would be that prideful. You know, that's just unbelievable. Yeah. And the whole time you're saying that, the people around you are just like,
shut up.
Boy, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you've said it before like this, Adam, that God often speaks to us.
Yeah.
Through ourselves.
Yeah.
Through our own voice. So I just, when you wrote that in the sermon, I was reading through it, I just thought, man, that's huge that if we're trying to listen to God as he mm-hmm. speaks back to us in the mirror, right? Mm-hmm. If we're looking in the mirror at ourselves, maybe we just need to be in tune with what comes out of our own mouth or what enters our own mind going, hey, God, are you trying to get my attention because mm-hmm. of how I spoke to, you know, my coworker, my spouse, my kid.
Mm-hmm.
So on that, I mean, look in the mirror. I also thought about this, this book, Every Moment Holy. I think we've referenced it a few times.
Yeah.
Just a book of collected prayers. And, I love it. It's kind of modernized. And so, this one is actually from the prayer for the ritual of morning coffee. So a lot of people do that. And the prayer ends by just saying, God, make me aware of my need
mm-hmm.
and awake to your grace.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that prayer. Just God today, make me at the same time aware of how much I need grace, but also awake to it that you have given it. And so
yeah.
not to be prideful or say, I don't need help.
Mm-hmm.
But God has the help that I need.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I love that. Kind of a really good bottom line as well. From today, people are messy and I
am people.
And look, anywhere that you go, the church, your political party,
mm-hmm.
your breakfast spot, your family gatherings, your workplace, the social club that you hang out with. Look, it's going to be messy because there's people. That does not mean that whenever there is some mess with some people in the church, that automatically disqualifies who God is and what he says about who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And man, if you're, you know, a little bit, apprehensive to the faith and listening, I imagine not many of you are, because if you're listening to Corinth in your car, you're probably a Corinth person.
Right.
But if you are, if you just stumbled across this and you tuned in, you're apprehensive. I would just tell you this as kind of a challenge, to go back to what Adam was saying earlier. Would you just start examining the church like the person that hurt me might have just been a bad apple?
Yeah.
And you know, give it another shot.
Mm-hmm.
Give it another shot. Cause I think what you'll find is if you really go in and put Jesus as your hope, and people as the mission, what you'll find is a lot of joy and comfort, that you don't have right now.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. Like, there are very few things in life that we try one thing, and if it did not work out, we just give up.
Yep.
You know, like everybody's had a bad haircut before and nobody went, that's it, never doing a haircut again.
Yeah.
You know, you try and find a new barber.
Right.
You know, you've had a bad experience with a doctor before and you never go, well, that's it, I'm never going to the doctor again. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, no, I need to find a new doctor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Bad mechanic. You know, you just go down the list and it's just like everything in life. And so if you did have a bad experience with the church, you know, with some Christians, then what if you just happened into some bad fruit?
Right.
And it's try out some others mm-hmm. and guarantee you will find one mm-hmm. that has got good fruit.
Yeah.
And that is producing well.
Yeah. I love it. Any other thoughts on challenge? We've maybe offered that one to people who are apprehensive.
Yeah.
Maybe what about a challenge for those who are trying their best to avoid the inconsistencies and the hypocrisy?
Yeah. I think that the big thing is this. Look at yourself before you look at others. If everybody would simply do their part and not worry about everybody else's behavior, oh my goodness, things would be a little bit better. You know, if everybody's like, you know, I'm just going to do what is right, what is good. I'm going to follow the Lord, follow his direction, and I'm going to start in the mirror before I start working on others, then we'd be in a much better spot. So I didn't think that would just be where this is doing the hard work of heart work, the slow work of soul work, and allowing the Spirit to do his transforming work in us.
Yeah, and may he do so. We're really grateful that you've tuned in. As we talked about at the beginning of the episode, which none of us are really excited about, but the next holiday on the calendar is Valentine's Day. So I've got a game to wrap us up, and it is Valentine's Day date, real or fake. So a date that happened.
Fake.
And was it a real date experience or a fake
Valentine's
date experience?
Day is fake, so they're fake. I've already won.
It's not the way the game works. Not the way the game works. You need to read about St. Valentine. That's
he's not
cool
even going to listen to the question. Right. Just
fake.
Puts us over at fake.
Fake. All right. Fake. So person writes.
So wait, but so
you just
are,
have to say whether it was real or fake.
Okay, so did this really happen?
Did this
or is
really
this
happen?
Okay.
Or did it?
It's another download youth ministry game, isn't it?
Another download youth ministry game.
Love it. Those are so fun.
They're super good. All right. So, person writes, the date was great, but when we got back to his apartment, he pulled out a suitcase full of magic tricks. Already slightly unsettled, he showed me a few, and the last trick, he made his thumb disappear. I asked him how he did it, and it turns out he was just missing his thumb.
I want this to be real so bad, so I'm saying real.
I say true.
This one is true.
Yes.
And so, I don't know if there was a second date in that one. Yeah. Probably not.
He lost his other thumb.
His other thumb. I don't know. There you go. All right. Next one. We went to get wings with a man.
What?
Sorry.
Okay. What kind of dates we talking about, man?
That changes the date scenario quite a bit.
This is not a different Valentine.
So, to get wings with a man. I went to get wings with a man that was eating his wings with a fork and knife. Legit, as if we were in a fancy restaurant. I went to the bathroom and did not come back.
Man, I hope that's true. That's like the Seinfeld episode where they eat the candy bars with a fork and knife.
Yeah, that's funny.
I'll say it's real, but I also think it's pretty judgmental. So,
yeah.
If a guy wants to eat his wings with a fork and knife,
hypocrite.
It's fine.
Unbelievable. Yeah. What do you think, Josh?
I think it's real.
Okay, it is fake.
Oh,
not a real scenario.
Okay, good. No judgmental then.
No judgmental person about the wings, which honestly... I would have walked out too. So, you got to eat your wings with
me. But wait a second. So here's a question. So are boneless wings really wings?
No.
They're chicken nuggets,
they are
right?
Chicken nuggets.
Large nuggets.
They are large flavored chicken nuggets. They don't taste anything.
Thank you.
I think we did like this hot take before on the podcast.
We've done this. Yeah, we've talked about this.
Okay.
Adamantly.
Yeah,
no.
Back when we were doing some really, really hot. what is it? Spossy?
Spossy.
Spossy
takes. Spossy takes. There you go. Okay, so... next one. Score is 1-1. You both got the first one right.
Yeah.
We went out to eat, and she ate her steak like a taco. She she folded it with her hands and ate it. No knife, no fork.
What kind of steak can you do that with?
That's have to be like
large,
a flank steak,
flank
steak, hanger
sirloin.
Steak.
Fake steak.
I'm going to say real.
This is real.
Ooh.
This is real. She did eat her steak like a taco.
It wasn't a filet. We know that. It wasn't a ribeye.
It wouldn't have been able to be
it
like
a
bone
T-bone. It'd be after like a hanger or
maybe like a
sirloin.
Kind of a sirloin, a longer sirloin.
I wonder if she put her like
a flank or
maybe a New York strip.
Yeah, but it just depends.
Did she put anything inside of it?
I wonder if she put her salad in there.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to. If it's a taco, you want to fill.
Yeah,
you want to fill the container with something.
Do you guys eat your pizza like that sometimes? Do
Ooh,
you like
if
fold
it's
your pizza like
piece,
a taco?
Like New York style. Yeah, absolutely.
That I can get behind.
I love that.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. All right. Next one. His family. I'm laughing already. His family owned a funeral home.
Yes.
I didn't have an issue with that. But he spent the later part of dinner telling me what kind of makeup techniques he would use on me if I was dead.
Oh, this is real.
I gotta try to get back in the game. I'll say fake.
It is real.
Oh, man, I'm down too.
Yeah, it's probably,
to Adam.
It's probably a documentary about it as well on a true crime.
True crime. He's like, Adam's like, I listened to this episode last week.
Yeah, exactly.
Ooh, boy. Okay, next one. I went on a date with a guy who was a lot taller than me. He asked me to act like his daughter and to order off the kids menu because that night kids ate free.
Did you do that to Tristan?
No. I'm cheap, but I'm not that cheap.
We'll go real again.
It is fake. So Josh brings it within one.
So fun story. Whenever I was in like middle school, I had an older cousin and she was talking about a date that she went on and the guy took her to I think it was Wendy's. It was Taco Bell. He took her to Taco Bell for the very first date, and he looked at her and he said, "Hey, you can have anything off of the value menu under 99 cents." And so that's
hilarious.
That's how he like started the date. And so I don't know if it was Valentine's Day. I don't know if it was, you know, like just a regular old Thursday after a, you know, basketball game kind of thing. But isn't that just the way to set things up for, they didn't end up getting married.
Yeah, I don't think
there's even a second date.
I wouldn't think so.
My friend really said that. That was his dating philosophy. And I guess he didn't date a lot. But he said,
that makes sense.
He said, always, always, always take her to McDonald's on the first date because there's nowhere to go but up.
Was that Matt Proctor?
Matt Proctor proposed.
I know.
At McDonald's. I always said, back when I was, you know, a bachelor, I always said that the third date was the good date for Olive Garden.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
Because
eating pasta, man.
Because it is proven that salad and pasta are the most unattractive foods to watch people eat. And so by the time the third date comes around, you might have an idea of whether or not you like this person, right?
Yeah.
And so you need to go to Olive Garden. You need to get the pasta out of the way. You need to get the salad out of the way. And at the end of the day, it's, you know, if I could get it through that.
And soup.
I could watch. Yeah, and soup. Like the slurp, you know, thing.
Yep.
It's like
you have to have a date.
If you
with
get
soup.
Through Olive Garden and you're like, you know what? I could watch this person eat soup, salad, and spaghetti for the rest of my life.
So if
you
that,
proceed with the relationship. It's that simple.
If that date goes well, is your fourth date to Longhorn and you eat your steak like a taco?
Or that, your wings like, with a fork and
we gotta really level up here. Can you handle this?
So for my third date with Tristan, I did take her to Olive Garden, not because I actually wanted to do that, but because she knows that was a joke that I used to say.
So
we went and I was like, hey. It was just fun.
Here's a question. How many dates did it take you to put a chip on your shoulder and have the joke?
The first time we were at a Mexican food restaurant.
Are you serious?
And I have done it every time since.
He even put chips in his pocket one time so he could do it on the way home in the car.
This joke grinds her gears so much that it is just so enjoyable for me.
Yeah.
There was one time where I put like 3 or 4 chips in my pocket from the Mexican restaurant.
Oh my gosh.
And we were like out running some errands afterwards and she would be looking at something in the aisle and I would just kind of like try to sneak a chip on her shoulder. Like, hey, what's with the chip on your shoulder there, babe? Sorry. Okay. I've got two more. I think Adam's up one. Okay. She mirrored my every movement. If I took a bite, so did she. If I used my napkin, she did too. I eventually noticed, so I tested her by randomly sliding my drink from one end of the table to another. Without skipping a beat, her drink slid across the table too.
Wow.
Real. I'll go real.
Yeah, I'll go real.
It is real.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is real. So, Josh, the best you can do is tie on this last one.
That's all right.
He invited me over to watch a movie, but didn't mention that he had several pet snakes, which he did not keep in any kind of cage.
Oh, my gosh.
They literally were just freely slithering around.
What a psychopath. I'm going to say fake because I can't. So yeah.
I know I have no chance of winning, but I was already going to go fake too.
So. Already going to go fake. It is fake.
Yeah.
Good.
So that was not a real scenario. At least that we know of. Maybe it happened.
Yeah, it's actually alligators.
It's not on the game, you know.
It was alligators.
Alligators. No, thank you. That one should not.
Maybe
see
it was
like
date. Like Gila monsters.
Gila monsters, iguanas or something.
Out in Arizona.
Yeah.
Leviathans.
Yeah. Leviathans. There you go. Bible joke. Hey, really grateful that you've joined us for another episode of Corinth in Your Car. We're wrapping up to my friend who left the faith this next Sunday. So we hope to see you and maybe one of your friends who has left the faith next week. And then we'll be back in your car on Monday morning through podcast. We're not going to just like show up in your car and just like sit next to you. But we're really grateful that you've tuned in. Thanks for coming in along. And then too, we'll remind you, if Josh had a walkout song, if Adam had a walkout song, if Luke had a walkout song, what would they need to be? We'll have some fun with that. We hope you have a great week. We appreciate you guys. Peace and grace.